Kim Philby was counterintelligence for the British, and of course he was a double agent for the Russians. And one of the things I found out is that he was stationed in Turkey and had just made a visit to Saudi Arabia a few weeks before my father's last fateful trip to Saudi Arabia. And so I've done a lot of research into what Kim Philby was up to. But in one sense, I mean, he was working a double game for the British and for the Russians. Meanwhile, both of them were against my father. They were spying on my father, and my father was spying on them. So, yeah.
So, to get back to your comment about the Russians, what was your point that you were making?
A comment about the Russians, sorry?
And Obama, that he's been president, that okay. relations with the Russians
have eased.
Had improved, and I didn't get where you were going with that,
right.
and how that ties into the oil people.
All right. The Russians, they all know what the game is. The fact of the matter is, under Bush, everything was ideologically driven, so that the Bush people were more virulently anti-communist than Obama and his foreign policy group. And so, therefore, like I saw the Russian foreign minister was talking, and he was just saying, you know, we have to cooperate more in the region. I mean, whether they will or not, that could be just rhetoric. But what the foreign minister said last night on a fascinating interview on Rose's show was that that relations are better, there's less tension, even though we know, as he said, economics drives everything. That's what the Russians said. So we know that we're competing against each other, but we also are worried about having a degree of stability, because the one thing that all major corporations want, they don't want war. They really don't want it. They want stability. You're next. And I haven't forgotten your question about the plane crash. If maybe afterwards you... Okay.
I was going to get back to the great game, as you call it, in this particular context. It looks to a lot of observers now, and you're beginning to see this in print, that the war in Afghanistan is essentially lost. That the U.S. is not going to be able to get control there. They're not going to be able to create security there for U.S. interests. And so what becomes of the pipeline project? What stage is it at? They haven't actually started any construction.
I think they have started construction, but I think it's halted because of the war.
What's your
Well, that's the problem.
The outlook of all this.
That's the problem. I think, you know, many people are saying, what are we doing there? How often have you seen war movies where you see the poor soldiers, you know, they've been at it for some time and they're turning to each other and they're saying, why are we here? Why are we fighting? It's that story all over again. I think the reason we're staying in is because there's this hope that somehow they're going to stabilize the region. But so far, they have not succeeded. I mean, they thought they had it in the bag with the Taliban. And there's this great quote in one of these documents where they said that the ambassador sort of let it slip that when the Taliban took over Kabul, this was back in 1994, I believe, when they were very strong, there was like a sigh of relief because we had our allies in place. So now who are they going to use as their allies? The problem is that the war has just antagonized the local population. The drone killings have antagonized the local population. So it's going woefully bad. And, of course, we all know that Afghanistan is the graveyard of empires. Part of it has to do with the geography. Part of it has to do with all these different ethnicities that are easily stirred up. One thing I learned from looking at my father's papers is that when you've got people of different ethnic groups and they're fighting each other, you know, scratch the surface a little bit and you'll find a foreign power there, turning one group against the other group. So here we got a major battleground of the great game. And who's stirring things up to make it difficult for the Americans? I don't know, because I don't have access to the intelligence reports. But I would wager that's going on. It could be even Russians and Chinese, for all we know.
Yeah.
How are they going to get out of it?
No, the way that we are going to get out of it is we're going to co-opt the Taliban.
Well, co-opt the Taliban, there have been efforts, as you know. to try to bring the Taliban back in. But, you know, things have just gotten so bad, I'm really not sure where it's heading right now. And I'm sure that they're very concerned. That's why you have, you know, change of leadership. They got rid of McChrystal. And, I mean, you know, now we're in a guessing game. You know, I don't have access to archival documents, so I could say for sure where it's all ending up. But I can say this for sure. The reason why we're keeping those troops in there is to try to bring about stability to protect that vital land route for pipelines. Yes.
At the peace conference, you had mentioned, and now I can't remember what you had said. The peace conference. You had mentioned Palestine, though, in part of the equation.
Thank you for reminding me. Yes. Okay. I have to do this one on Palestine. It's very important. Remember that initial document I showed you here? Let's use this one. Okay. This is a World War II document. All right, let's go back to this pipeline. So, actually, it's in the book. Just a very quick diversion. 2 years ago, I ran for attorney. I'm a lawyer as well as a writer. I ran for attorney general in Vermont, and I pledged to prosecute Bush if elected using state criminal laws. I had read Bugliosi's book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder, read his legal theory, his evidence. I thought it was sound, and you know, I had to do my part. And so that's what I pledged to do. And Bugliosi, you know who Bugliosi is, right? Famous prosecutor, determined to prosecute Bush for murder, and had said any attorney general or any DA can do it in their separate states, and this is how you do it. So I took up the challenge. I said, well, I'm not attorney general, but I'm running for attorney general, so hey, I'll make the pledge, see where it ends. Of course, I lost. We have three parties in Vermont. I'm a member of the Progressive Party. We're the most viable third party in the country. We have five people sitting in the legislature now. Anyway, so I ran, and then I lost, but I learned a lot, and I wrote a book. And, what?
You're running again, aren't you?
I'm running again, yes. Yes, I am running again. Yeah, and I'm running again as long as these people and got us into an illegal war. They committed war crimes. They practically destroyed our country. And there's no statute of limitations on murder and war crimes. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm waiting for Eric Holder to do his job. I feel totally vindicated with my race 2 years ago because now he's appointed a special prosecutor to go after the CIA interrogators. And if he really followed, if he followed the leads, it would go right to the White House. And another thing I've been doing is helping a group called the Justice Robert Jackson Committee go after the Justice Department to get all these documents on the Bush lawyers, the torture lawyers, to find out who, you know, why they came up with the illegal torture, secret torture laws, and who authorized them to do it. And it's patently clear that they were getting orders from the White House. So all of that is in here. But I also try to make sense. I try to explain why did this illegal war happen and what can we learn about it. And so at one point I started, I can't remember how I came on to this, but I started looking at the role of Israel and its relationship with the Bush administration, which was very tight. Israel has never had such a good relationship with an American head of state as it did under Bush. And so here was the plan. The plan was to rebuild this pipeline, which had been closed since 1948. Saddam Hussein was opposed to it. He was opposed to it because the Arab Street would have gone berserk if he had actually sold Iraqi oil to Israel. So the idea was get rid of him and get somebody who was more amenable to bringing good relations with Israel. Does anybody know who they had in mind? It's a name, you'll know the name as soon as I tell you.
Chalabi?
Yeah, Chalabi. Chalabi was in exile, and as you know, do you know who Chalabi, what makes Chalabi famous other than the fact that he was brought in after Saddam was overthrown. He was oil minister for a while. Does anybody know what else was his claim to fame, dubious fame?
Misinformation
about what?
Weapons of mass destruction.
Right.
Misinformation about weapons of mass. And who did he feed this misinformation to? Judith Miller of the New York Times. He was the major source for Judith Miller, who put out these series of documents saying that it was weapons of mass destruction that was endangering our national security. See, that's one of the whole thesis for why Bush can be prosecuted is that he knew it was a lie. He knew it was a lie all along. And he got our soldiers involved in a war on false pretenses and has absolutely, if he were tried for murder, he would have absolutely no defense because the only defense he would have is self-defense. But the thing is, Saddam Hussein was never a threat to our country, had absolutely no relationship to 9/11, and had not been and was not threatening to bomb us with weapons of mass destruction. So the whole thing was built on a lie. In any event, the pipeline. So, yeah, they thought it was going to be a slam dunk. 2 weeks after the invasion, the Israeli Interior Minister, Peretzky, says, we're going to start doing the plans. We're going to start building that pipeline. And you had Netanyahu, who was then, I think he was finance minister. He was bragging about it. He was saying, hey, the oil is going to be flowing to Haifa soon. And I've got it all documented, Haaretz, Asia Times, et cetera. It's all here. And so they thought they had it. And the whole idea was to turn the whole Eastern Mediterranean into an energy corridor. If you start looking at all the problems that have existed in the Eastern Mediterranean, there was a time they were bombing the smithereens out of Tripoli. I don't know if any of you remember that. It was in northern Lebanon. There was this huge battle. And, Tripoli is the location of the northern route of that pipeline. Okay, it's a pipeline port. Haifa is a pipeline port. Guess what another place was that they were considering, even during the time of my father, for running a pipeline terminal? It's very famous. Begins with a G. Gaza. Okay, so what I'm saying is when you start seeing in Lebanon, the Lebanon Civil War, there was the Israeli invasion of Lebanon that you know that was recently. I have to tell you that I'm looking at it in terms of, well, let's see now. If you're going to run a pipeline from Iraq and you're going to take it over to the Eastern Mediterranean, then you've got to pacify the region. You've got to make sure you can run a secure pipeline. Well, how do you pacify a region? How have we ever pacified a region? How do we pacify the West? What do we do? We slaughtered Indians. That's one thing we did, didn't we? I mean, you know. So, well, there's all sorts of techniques, including using missionaries. That's what Thy Will Be Done was all about.
And you send in settlers.
And you what?
Send in settlers.
And you send in settlers. Yeah, that's true, too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, you got to look at it from the point of view of how they look at it. You got a problem here. We got to run a pipeline. We got to pacify it. We have to secure it. And the thing is that this is the best, this is the most economical route. But, you know, the problem is the whole area is a cauldron of ethnic differences. That's the problem for them. That and the fact that they don't have really well-trained people the way they used to. So they're not getting good intelligence. That's another problem. Yes.
So, as a question, let's superimpose this onto a problem of this week with the upcoming Moscow talks about carving up the Arctic. And yeah. How do you think that the carving of the Arctic for oil and mineral searching is really going to work out with these players, especially considering the fact that there's not really people there to invade?
True. Which may be why the Russians are saying, we really have to cooperate. That's what the Russians said. Isn't that what they said? We're going to cooperate with the United States on this. Don't kid yourself. That's what they're saying on the surface. I believe, underlying it all, they're probably, they're all trying to stake out their claims. They may have less of a problem with the people issue. That's true. Maybe that's why they cooperate more. It's only speculation. But you're right to raise that issue. That's the next location. Yes?
Is there any way that Al-Qaeda figures into all of this?
Well, that's a whole other long story, Al-Qaeda. The origins of Al-Qaeda are murky. I believe Al-Qaeda was begun by the CIA. It was funded by the CIA. I think it started in Somalia. Correct me if I'm wrong. So Al-Qaeda is, I think, mostly in Pakistan now, not in Iraq, which is why everyone is saying, why are our troops in Afghanistan when Al-Qaeda's major centers of operation are not there? They're in Pakistan. There's a very good book that explains all of this, a lot of what I've been saying tonight. If you want to get down to the details, it's by Peter Dale Scott, and it's called The Road to 9/11. And what he shows is all the maneuverings of the different, the Pakistanis and the Afghans and the Saudis and who gets funded and the heroin trade. It's all there. And what he does is he traces it chronologically all the way through. And what he talks about are, sort of secret, there are secret governments, secret groups. Certainly under Bush, it was a renegade group. One of the arguments that I made in this book is that if we do not hold them accountable, then the impunity will just get worse. It was like, what was it? I heard on the radio today, some of you, if you listen to Tom Ashbrook, who I tend to listen to on point, and he's just talked about the murders that are going on in Afghanistan, unfortunately. American troops are murdering Afghans, innocents. And now they're being tried for murder. But I mean, it was a fascinating story of the father of one of these soldiers. The soldier had actually tipped his father off. My God, they're murdering people. The father tried to blow the whistle. The son ultimately gets caught, and there's a bunch of them now that are standing trial for murder. But one of the lines that came out that really struck me was that if you let it go on and you don't do anything about it, it gets worse. All right? That's why I felt like we got to draw the line. As Americans, we have to say we are not tolerating this anymore. We are not allowing this criminal behavior to happen because it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. And we all know what happened to our democracy under Bush. And unfortunately, on foreign policy, some of the same problems exist under Obama, which is sad. But it's going to get worse. We have to let them know that we will not tolerate criminal behavior in our name. So, did that answer your question? Look, Al-Qaeda... What?
I think I have to read the book.
Well, yeah. Read the book. I'm not an expert on Al-Qaeda yet or on the Taliban. It's just my understanding of it is that a lot of the people that have joined the Taliban are poor people that have no means of income, and the Taliban have raised money, and they are just mercenaries. They're just people. They don't like being occupied, all right, but they're not ideologically driven. This is what I've heard. Have any of you heard that? I believe that's so.
There was a PBS special behind the Taliban lines where I was convinced watching that they truly believed in their mission.
Well, there may be some. It's a small number, I believe. Yeah, some of the leadership, I think they feel like, they got to keep the infidels out. I mean, part of it is just resisting occupation. They've been doing that with the Russians, and they're going to do it with the Americans. And one of the things that is made in this book by Peter Dale Scott is that the worst foreign policy mistake we made is by backing these Islamic fundamentalists who fought the Russians, but they almost hated the Americans as much as they hated the Russians. So that has been part of our problem. Beth.
What are your plans for your next book? I know you're working on one right now.
Well, I'm fine. I'm still working to get this book done. I've had a lot of difficulty finding a publisher for it. I tried to find a publisher for it, everything I've told you. It was during the Bush administration. I think, you know, there's a lot of fear. We all know about fear since 9/11, right? So maybe that's dissipated somewhat and I can get a publisher for the book. Right now I'm focusing on my campaign. By the way, if anybody cares to support it, my website is shardennett.org. By the way, my campaign is for Attorney General. I'm focusing a lot more on local issues. One of them is closing Vermont Yankee, which I know has a lot to do with...
I have her stuff posted on the Facebook page.
Yeah, it's very, oh my God, they are not giving up that energy. Even though our Vermont Senate voted not to relicense, we're the only state in the country that has the right to close a plant. But that doesn't mean that the NRC isn't going to come down and figure out some way. Even though they said they're going to respect Vermont's vote, it's all in the paper. They're gearing up. They hope there's going to be a new governor. It's the major issue of the campaign. I just...
Isn't somebody else trying to buy that plant?
Yeah, they're trying to spin it off. We don't want it, period. I mean, most Vermonters don't. Actually, it's divided. It's very well divided. But it's a huge issue in the campaign. I just had a press release, press conference yesterday, where I'm the first person to talk about cancer and its link to health problems, because that's been muzzled terribly, and we've got to get over that. But in any event, over there, light blue shirt.
The idea that the surrounding states to Vermont have as much of a stake in the downriver syndrome of Massachusetts,
having
at least as much stake, and therefore should be educating ourselves how to get involved with Vermont and be a part of it with the surrounding states. And it amazes me at this point that there's so little action on the part of the surrounding states to get together with Vermont because we're all in this.
Well... there's a... Uh-huh. Okay.
Well, then bring
if she knows a lot about this, my other persona would come down again. I had blow-up charts about cancer rates in Vermont and how... you know, we got to start having this conversation, because that's what wakes people up, which is exactly what terrifies the NRC. That's why they took jurisdiction over health and safety in the 1990s. And I just learned this the other day. You know why? You know why they took over jurisdiction so that legislators couldn't talk about health and safety issues? Because they knew the aging plants were up for relicensing. They didn't want us to know about the health hazards of low-level radiation. So it's absolutely critical that we band together, speak out on it, and let them know we are not going to tolerate. You know, this is the only plant that's a question of whether it'll be relicensed. We got a governor now, a Democratic, Peter Shumlin, has been the most outspoken opponent to Vermont Yankee, and he's now running against a Republican who supports it. So it's going to be very interesting between now and November. His chances are good. Yeah. But it's an ugly campaign, because the Republican is sort of a nice guy, but he's definitely a nativist, like always wants to remind everybody that he's fifth generation. And you know what he calls his campaign? Or at least his campaign for bringing new jobs and development to Vermont. He calls it Vermont Pure. And when you think about it, I don't like that. You know, I don't like it. What it's doing is it's setting the old-time, you know, old-time Vermonters against the Flatlanders. And not only that, but a Jewish Flatlander, you know. So, there's a part of it. I know there's an undercurrent there. And it's sad, because we like Vermonters, we like to think of us as all one beautiful community. What?
What happened to the melting pot?
Yeah. Well, you know, this is what happens during economic hard times. All right, I'm only going to take two more questions, then we got to stop.
Maybe May I ask a question? I want to get back to... Yes, but I want to get back to your campaign.
Yeah.
Because I think it's very exciting. Number one, that you are running. Number two, that a progressive, that there's a progressive party. And that... Where's your sign-up sheet?
I don't know. Whoever's got...
Outside supporters?
No, absolutely.
I mean, what's going on with your campaign, and how do we make sure you win?
What I need is to be on radio. I've been on radio all over the country when I did it 2 years ago. And I need donations. That's what I need, because I need to put ads on TV. I need to hammer them. And I don't know. What are my chances? Do you think anyone ever wants to talk about their chances? I mean, I'm a third-party candidate, okay? But I'll tell you something. The incumbent is really vulnerable this time on certain issues. One of them is Vermont Yankee. He's been really complacent, and I've got all the goods on him on that. Much too complacent. I could go on and on. That's why maybe I should come down for another talk, because I could tell you lots about that. But the other thing is he's also involved in covering up a case of... believe it or not, child pornography among the Vermont State Police. That's going to be another issue. He's been really lax on environmental things. So I have much better information. I'm more prepared this time. He's very well entrenched. But, you know, I have to do what I can do. And who knows? One never knows where these things will go. Yeah.
I just want to ask a question about Iraq, back to Iraq, and
okay.
Why you've left off the Clinton administration and Madeleine Albright and all those years of sanctions to make it sort of seem like really Bush is the worst, but indeed, and Clinton with Haiti and his economic policies. I mean, whatever. But why have you left that?
Well, I mean,
down?
Yeah, those were horrendous and terrible. You're absolutely right. It was Bush Sr. that did the war, but it was Clinton that did those dreadful sanctions. And in that sense, it's a variation of the great game again. I mean, it's just like they'll do, sanctions. It's probably Clinton can do sanctions because it's not as extreme as sending troops. Remember what my father said, God help us if we ever send troops into the Middle East, because he knew that was really possibly going to hurt us. And I would wager that there are sophisticated people in the State Department that knew that you got to do something short of sending troops that would nonetheless weaken Saddam Hussein. And another thing they were worried about is that he was going to trade in oil and euros. That affects the financial world. That was another reason why they were very concerned. But it's a matter of degree. The great game is the great game, and in some cases it's carried out with more finesse and less violence than in other cases, but nonetheless they're driven. I mean, it's Obama that's doing the drone attacks, and that's dreadful.
Back to the influences on Obama. You were talking about the Trilateral Commission.
Yes.
And Kissinger and the Rockefellers and so forth were smart enough to know what your father, you just repeated what your father said, not war. Do you think that Obama is also torn that he shouldn't be having war there?
I don't know what's inside Obama's head. Obama is a very skillful orator. I suspect that Obama is not real happy about what he walked into. And by the same token, he's got to deal with very powerful people. Unfortunately, his foreign policy, some of the top people in his foreign policy, which are Bush holdovers. That's what happens when you're a new person coming in. You're still going to have some old people there. Maybe he'll clean out house, but he's really had a huge influence on Obama's foreign policy, for the worse, in my opinion. But, you get into that position, that powerful position, it's like, look, here's another analogy. It's like Kennedy, okay? When Kennedy came into office, a lot of similarities. A youngish senator, had really no experience in foreign affairs. And when Kennedy came in, and this is documented in our book, Thy Will Be Done, he says, I don't know how to run a government. Let's get that Rockefeller panel in there. And what happened is the Rockefeller people supplied many of the advisors. Who's behind Obama now? They're top Wall Street people. Many of them are in the Rockefeller, Chase, Morgan Goldman Sachs, the whole bit. I mean, what's he to do? He's handed a huge crisis. He doesn't know how to do this, I'm sure. I mean, he has to turn to the experts. That's the way it works. And then slowly sort of works his way through it, and we're still watching. I really don't know what to say, except that he's constrained. I don't know what's in his heart. I suspect he's not happy. You're the last question.
So bring us up to date, the Tea Party.
Yeah.
What big oil interests are backing them?
The Tea Party, I don't know if it's big oil, but what's the name of that? Those brothers I heard of.
Coke.
Yeah, the Koch brothers. And what are they involved in? I forget.
It's oil.
Is it oil?
It is.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, there you go.
So that would be another renegade group?
Yeah. Yes, renegade Koch brothers. Who's ever heard of them? That's New Wealth. Yeah, good question. I think it's New Wealth trying to get theirs.
So the same kind of thing as the Bush Rockefeller.
Yeah.
Only.
And they're doing absolutely. Another person, Newt Gingrich. Guess who's behind Newt Gingrich? You know, Newt Gingrich is very conservative, right?
Yeah.
Right. DuPont's. My husband, before I met him, he wrote another major book on the DuPonts. So I can tell you that Newt Gingrich was the creation of the DuPont family. He's the richest family in America, ultra-conservative, dealt with the Nazis, tried to do an armed march on Washington, the one that Smedley Butler blew his whistle on. And they're very conservative, very powerful, and they backed Newt Gingrich contract on America. What did we just hear this week? Did you hear the pledge? Does that sound like contract on America, contract for America? It's the same old stuff. That's it. They're going to try, come hell or high water, to get back in power. Thank you. Thank you very much, Flower.